What is up, everybody? This is Braden from Flint Mastering, and I am the host and content curator of the Mixing Music Podcast exclusive episodes. And today we have for you an exclusive archive, which means you're going to hear an exclusive episode that DK and I recorded almost a year ago. You're going to have the chance to hear what our exclusive episodes are all about and how much fun and learning goes on between me and DK as we discuss technical tips and important techniques in relation to producing, mixing, and mastering. If you enjoy this episode and you'd like to be a part of the exclusive content we provide twice a week, you can do so by heading over to mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive. Thank you so much for listening. We love you, we appreciate you, and we couldn't do this podcast without you. I hope you enjoy this episode of the exclusive archives. And with that, happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy.
James Dean Mixes, and with me is a man whose lungs look like the bottom side of a cafeteria table, Braden Flint.
What yeah. the fuck?
Give us a nice little cough into the mic.
Yeah, my lungs are messed up.
Are they still?
I don't know. I'm fucking dying. I don't care.
Dude, if you actually died, that wouldn't be funny anymore. So, yeah.
Well,
in order to make it a joke, you have to live, okay?
I'll try my best.
Otherwise I'd feel kind of bad. And laughing at his pain is a man who supposedly has children, but we've never seen them in person. DK Mixes.
Hey, I have seen DK's kids in person, and they look nothing like him. They're blonde hair, blue eyes. Those children did not come from DK's balls like he likes
that
to
is
say.
So, that is,
they speak Russian, not a lick of English.
That is so funny because you two are specifically are the some of the people that they call Uncle Braden and Uncle Jane. So it's like...
They call me Uncle Braden?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Or like that bitch.
Thank you.
They're like pussy.
That douchebag that we let stay in our house for a couple weeks a year.
Who's that guy that comes and makes us uncomfortable? It's like, oh, Braden. That's
yeah, tells you and Kayoko to go on a date so he can be alone with the kids.
That's true. Kayoko did, or Braden, you did babysit for us a couple times. Was it once or twice?
Yeah, it was really easy. Twice? Your kids were asleep, so I just sat on the couch and made sure no one intruded in your home.
Yeah, dude, I have the easiest kids. It's kind of like it's kind of crazy how well mannered they are. You know, I was talking to I always talk about my kids with my therapist, and I'm always have this like lingering concern that, you know, I just want to make sure that not concern, but like I always want to try to be the best parent as I could possibly be, and part of that real is recognizing like I can't control everything about him, and I have to be okay no matter what, you know. And it's I forgot where I was going with this. Anyway, oh, no, I was going to say, like, I'm worried that, like, I love him so much that he's going to have separation anxiety if he, like, has to go to, like, scout camp or something like that. And the therapist is like, nah. Kids that get so much love from their parents, they want to leave. They're like, please stop loving me. Please leave me alone. So that's
Make
a good
sure they
thing.
Resent you.
Yeah, it's the ones that don't give their kids enough attention that have separation anxiety. It's like, oh, that's super interesting. Well, then I'm not going to feel bad about totally just smothering my children with hugs and kisses. So, yeah, my kids are easy, and I think it's because we love them. That was like a small, slow stab at anyone whose kids are not easy. Anyone who's raising fucking bastards. Just like...
I feel called out and I don't have kids, man.
Also, every set of parents here in Texas, none of them love their kids.
You're just a shitty human being, Braden.
No. You have to meet these kids. When I did substitute teaching for a little bit and my other job,
right.
Doggy, you have no idea.
Right. You were,
what,
the monsters children can be.
Do you have, before we start this episode, which I promise listeners, I promise that we'll get into, tell us real briefly, 30 seconds, the funniest story from your substitute teaching time.
Oh.
Do you have a good funny one off the top of your head that you prepared? I want this to be like your minute stand up on Kill Tony right now, talking about this experience.
Yeah, there's like too many, and they're not. You kind of had to be there, honestly. The one that made me
laugh.
Yeah,
that's not how you start a joke, bro. Yeah.
The one that made me laugh the hardest.
What's up with
was,
these kids?
You know, a lot of kids like to wear white Air Jordans or the white Air Force Ones, you know, those thick Nike shoes.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. And if you wear the all black ones, then usually you're kind of weird.
Yeah. It's a meme. So, the wearing the black Air Jordans.
Wearing the black.
It means you're a villain, basically. Yeah, that's...
I'm standing there next to this kid who's been talking to me all class. He's been really cool, really funny. This other kid, they're playing kickball. Another kid walks up in those black Air Force Ones to kick the ball. He totally shanks it. It was one of the worst kicks I've ever seen in my life. And the kid standing next to me turns to me and goes, "That's the black Air Force Ones talking." So, anyway.
You're right. We had to be there.
Yeah, like I said, not super funny.
I'm guessing it was funny at the moment.
It was hilarious at the moment. You just had to be there. The kid that was kicking the ball was a total nerd. It was a horrible kick. And then he said that. And yeah.
Aw, dude, what are you saying about nerds?
I mean, he sucked at sports.
Brayden bullied him.
Aww.
Yeah, I bullied him as the teacher.
That's crazy. All right, anyway, let's get into this episode.
Oh,
wait,
I'm sorry.
What was the dead end?
There was an awkward silence because I forgot that I was supposed to kick this off. We're giving
everybody listening to the podcast just looked at their phones. Is like, is this still going?
Did it pause? My bad. We gave James the reins at the beginning of the show to announce it and everything, so that I was like, he's just taking over. My bad. All right. Well, now that we've got all the banter out of the way, thanks everyone for putting up with our banter for 8 minutes. Yes, that's what the timer says. We appreciate you. We love you. And thanks for sticking with us through that. I apologize for my shitty ass joke. That whatever. So
it wasn't
today,
shitty. It just wasn't
going
funny.
Say what?
Just kidding. Go ahead.
You asked. I delivered a bad delivery. Bad egg. All right. Here's what we're getting into today. We're going to be talking about some other bad eggs, also known as DK and James's mixes. Complete and total ass. No, I'm just kidding. But for real, today we're going to talk about DK's and James's mixes and lately what they have been trying to improve upon with their latest mixes. So obviously, everyone starts from scratch, keeps working up. There's little things to level up on in each mix. You can continue to get better. It's something that I talked about in a solo episode one time, is that oftentimes in other sports or other things in life, there's little tiny steps you take to improve. You know, if you're playing soccer, you got to start with putting your cleats on, then you got to go to running, then you got to go to ball handling, passing. There's all these little skills, but I feel like we don't ever break mixing and audio engineering down into sections like that, like practicing individual skills to help you get better at mixing. So I was good at hockey, not at soccer. Well, anyway, so here's DK and James. I'm saying this as if they're like going to come out from behind a curtain. Here's DK and James to talk about what they're doing and their latest mixes to level up. We'll start with James because DK's a douchebag. All right.
Okay. For me, I have two things that I've been really focusing on. The first one I did bring up in the last episode, and I feel like I have already made some pretty noticeable improvements on it, is my low end in my mixes. Because across my mixes, DK has been giving me feedback on a lot of my mixes. It's been a consistent thing that my low end has just been out of control, or it's just been kind of wonky or not as tight as it should be. And Saturday, this past week, I had a chance to go and hang out a little bit with Bob Horn, who is known for having amazing low end in his mixes. And it was really cool talking to him about it, especially because he recently moved from a studio that he used to mix out of to his home. And I was asking him, okay, do you notice, is it better mixing here? Is it better at your last studio? He said, it's funny because technically the monitoring setup and the acoustics of the room is a lot better in his last room that he had. But for some reason, people have been telling him that since he moved into his house to mix there, his mixes and his low end has gotten better. Where specifically in the setup, acoustically, the low end is a lot worse. So that was kind of an interesting eye opener of like, okay, I kind of have no excuse.
Why do you think he explain why his low end has gotten better?
I asked him why, and he said, I honestly don't know. People have just been telling him. my guess is that since it is a less well-treated room, he has to pay more attention to it. I'm not sure. But so what I started doing since then is I would, just because my room and my speakers don't give off what you would call the best low end or doesn't give the most information, I started listening to on my headphone a bunch of Bob Horn mixes and Manny Mariquin, because he also has really good low end, and specifically focusing on the low end just while I'm working and doing other things. And I will take note of how it sounds on that, and then I'll take off my headphones and then play it on my speakers and see how those little bits and pieces that of low end sound on the speakers, now that I know what quote unquote good low end sounds like. So I've been going back and forth, and I've been really focusing on my monitoring for that. And I started using my headphones more to check the low end and my mix. And this last mix that I sent for revisions, one of the main notes that she said was, this was like revision 2 or 3, that I started doing this low end stuff. She specifically noted that the low end sounds a lot better and sounds tighter.
Nice.
So I feel like it really is worth it taking the time to get to know how the low end translate. So I was going back and forth and listening on low volume, high volume, and really focusing on how that low end sounds specifically from their good mixes. And I've been trying to, I guess, because I just didn't exactly know what good low end sounds like. I would just hear people say it. And now I just feel like I have a better idea of what good low end sounds like. So I feel like my low end has been getting better because of that.
Nice.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a problem that a lot of people have. So I'm really glad that you feel like you're improving. I mean, it's I like this topic because it's just like, no matter what, no matter how good you are, everybody kind of goes through like phases or seasons of like focusing extra hard on specific aspects of their mix. And that kind of leads to improvement. Or even if it's just a false sense of improvement, I don't think that it's a bad placebo. You know, like...
Yeah, I think Damian Taylor even said, I forgot, he was doing some mix and he was just showing an example. And then he did this thing. He said, maybe it's a placebo effect, but I think it sounds better. And then just like moved on.
Yeah, because it's more about like, yeah, I literally think it's like that confidence or like that ability to not have to look back and question your moves is just as valuable as like, honestly, getting your low end right. It's so I think like feeling like you've getting your low end right, like slowly by focusing on and working on it for a bunch of songs, you know, working on it for a season. So that's awesome. You're making improvements with your low end.
Yeah.
And that's something like that everybody has. So you said your solution was headphones and.
Headphones. And it was honestly came down to just really focusing on my monitoring. It's something I did forever ago. In my way old apartment in college, we wasn't even that well of a sound treated room. It was a practice I did where I would listen to songs on different levels and see how they translate on those different levels and just get to know my speakers very well.
Yeah.
But I did that this time very much focusing on the low end. So I did that with my speakers and my headphones and my AirPods just to kind of see how that translation carries. So I feel like I now have a better idea of what good low end sounds like on. I have Kali LP6s on my Kalis or on my Audio Technicas.
And that's important. Like you even texted me last week, this last couple weeks, where you're like, can I get a playlist of songs that you think have great low end? Because you're need to reset what I think is good low end.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's good. It's hard to describe, but yeah, it's a combination of like what it sounds like, but also it's almost like what it feels.
Oh, definitely. Like it's a lot of what it feels like. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, and I definitely think that that's a lot of issue that people have. It's hard to control low end, and it's a lot of feeling based stuff.
Yeah, so I feel like it's getting better right now. And then the other thing is, it's also a frequency spectrum thing that I feel like I've now overcome, or like I'm starting to just getting over the hump of overcoming is something else that DK has pointed out in my mix is you said it was a phase that you went through too of taking too much of like lower mids out of things and it takes away from like the fullness of it. And it's a similar thing of just listening to how that lower mid area sounds in other songs. And I think before I was just uncomfortable with that space. And so I kind of had to almost train my brain again to be like, no, it's okay that you're hearing that section. So that was just kind of a matter of, it's almost like training yourself to use less plugins. You have to almost, you have to fight the impulse to just scoop that out. And yeah, I feel like because of those two things, like right now, my mixes are starting to improve because of that.
Brayden, did you ever feel like you got your low end, like just down, like you just so good? Like no matter how shitty or good of a project they sent you, you're just going to get the low end perfect.
I mean, I don't feel like I ever was, I don't know. I don't feel like there's ever a point, at least for me anyway, where it would have been like, oh, no matter what they send me, like the low end is going to be perfect.
Well, actually, hold on. Let me change the question. I think that was a shitty question. Let me change the question that better suits you. You've seen lot of mixes from a lot of different mixers.
Yes.
Try to describe mixes that have great low end. What does great low end mean to you? As like, you know, as someone that's seen a lot of different mixers and a lot of different mixes.
I think it's for the first thing, I think is genre dependent. I think some genres, the low end doesn't matter at all, to be quite frank. It's just like a mess. Like I've done a lot of acoustic music or kind of like, would you say like folksy songs, and like the low end doesn't matter at all. Like that is just all about the mid range and the vocals and how they like sit together. However, there is one mix engineer in particular that sends me exclusively hip hop. And when we first started working together, the mixes were not great. The low end, I would say it felt, the low end just felt like really weak. Like even blasting my speakers, it felt like you couldn't feel it. So like you were saying earlier, the feel of the low end is really important. And I think it should, because everybody's been in like a loudspeaker system where you can feel the low end like rattle your chest, or you feel like the vibration. So I think number one, being able to feel low end. Number two, low end that's like full, but not overbearing. I think sometimes when people try to make the low end full, they overdo it. And so then it makes the whole mix sound dark and it just becomes like too over the top. Like there's just too much of it. It's like you're trying to, I don't know what I'm trying to say. You're trying to swim in the shallow end of a pool and you're getting hit with 50-foot waves. You know what I mean? I don't know. That's a horrible analogy, but,
holy shit. No, I'm just kidding.
No, in there and get nailed with a
wave. No, actually that kind of made sense.
Like,
In a weird way.
And then, I don't know, for me, like, I guess it depends on what your definition of, like, tight is. I don't usually like to use the word tight for low end. I like to use the word punchy more often. I feel like if the low end is, like, how do I say this? Like, even though low-end frequencies aren't directional in and of themselves, it feels like it's directional. Like, it feels like it's just coming straight at you, like, straight down the barrel of a gun. And it's, like, really punches hard. So I feel like when the low-end is, like, as good as it can be, number one, it's not... what did I say number one was? I can't even remember now. Number two, though, was it's full but not overbearing. And then... Okay. Number three is it's punchy. So, I don't know. That's the thing I've noticed the most. It's tricky. And one thing I will say, it's very easy to see low end that is like over bloated, or I guess I should just say bloated. And it feels like, especially because I do a lot of work in headphones, it feels like all I'm hearing is low end. It's just encompassing my entire head. Like there's no definition to it. I guess that's what I would say instead of like tight low end. Like I want a defined low end.
Yeah. When I say tight, I mean defined as well. I think that's a better word.
Yeah.
So
like, I'm not talking about the attack transient of the kick. I'm talking about the release of the kick into the bass. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, that's where that definition comes, that definition is. It's that release, not the attack. No, it's also the attack too, but I'm also thinking like, yeah, the way that it pulls back. Anyway, cool.
Yeah, those are mine.
That's awesome. I'll tell you straight up. I'll tell you what the last thing was, my last season of Focus. So I think for like the last, up until about a few weeks ago, I think I was really focused on a couple things. One, first and foremost, I have always overcompressed a little bit just across the board. I prefer that sound. I like that sound. But there's been moments where I look back at portfolio mixes and I'm like, that's a little overcompressed. And so like, I've been trying to utilize dynamics, especially like unbalanced dynamics where the kick is way too loud or the snare is way too loud or something like that. Just like one element, like letting things poke out a little bit more and being okay with it. Just better use of dynamics in general and that may mean not overcompressing. And then the second thing, which is counterintuitive to the first thing, which is trying to maintain that level of that feeling of dynamic energy and use of energy while getting the choruses fucking loud. Like the loudest points of the song, I was working on trying to hit at the quietest. I mean, during the loudest point of the song, I was trying to hit -7 LUFS for like the last 4 to 6 months. Like I've just been working really hard. There's been a couple of reasons for that, mostly due to demands of labels and management. And that's something that I felt like I was weak in because I always want to leave a little bit more headroom. And I always felt like, you know, I want to leave a little bit of space. But due to the way that culture seems to be going for the genres that I'm working on, I feel like I needed to practice getting comfortable and getting better at maintaining a sensation of dynamics while getting very loud LUFS scores. So for the last, so I mixed almost all of Barely Human's EP, MySpace Addiction. Bro went from 2 million Spotify monthly listeners to 6.2 million monthly listeners on Spotify in a span of like 2 months.
All Bro's because of killing DK. It.
Yeah. Bro's all because of me. Sure. For the sake of this podcast, it's 100% me, not at all due to his efforts and it's on social media. Not at all.
What is it that you're doing different to get the loudness you're talking about?
So I think I'm just getting a little bit more. So what I've noticed with these speakers too, it's partially learning these speakers. These speakers are like really ultra clean. They're so clean that they make ATC sound distorted, which is just like incomprehensible for anybody that understands what I just said. So it's like, first off, a lot of the distortion that I'm really attuned to, that I'm used to hearing on other speakers is these speakers are so clean that when I get to that threshold of like, this is a little bit too dirty, it's actually, you can't hear it on any other systems. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's like that, it's so easy to hear dirt distortion on these speakers because they're so clean that I need to get comfortable hearing it. I need to change the threshold of which I think is okay. Do from referencing and from practice, you know. Second thing is better use of mid-range. Not low-end, but mid-range, I think I've been working on as well, which goes into what I've been working on for the last month or so. But I feel like I did a good job. One of the songs, Blow Up, I think it was Blow Up on Barely Human. You could check out his EP. It's already got millions of streams on Spotify. And the song Blow Up, that one's got one of the punchiest kick drums I've ever heard, or like in a song. Like I feel like that I in that EP, I think that I made that the punchiest kick drum, punchiest low end. But the song's fucking -4 LUFS. It is so loud, and it was a lot of tweaking, practicing, and I think it was partially like my friend who does EDM who masters his music to like 0 LUFS, and I was like experimenting by trying things. I was doing like really exaggerated moves just to experiment and see how different types of distortion would affect different frequency ranges and different perceptions of dynamic. I was messing around with a lot of side chaining, both audible and non-audible. side chaining. Audible, non-audible meaning like it's side chaining, but you can't hear. You can't hear the side chain. So I get the effects and the headroom of side chaining without the movement of the compressor working side chain, you know? And then, more recently, I've been focusing on specific, this is super specific, hyper specific, but for the last month, I feel like I need to focus on and get better at reutilizing one, specifically around 2 to 2.5K, but I'll just say between 1 and 4K in vocals. I need to use more, add more, get comfortable with it. I have this like hypersensitivity issue where I can really hear the shit out of that range. I mean, as human beings, we're all attuned to that, but like I feel physical pain with some things, and there's like some natural resonances in the voice and the microphone and the preamps or whatever in the rooms that like I should be more okay with leaving in. Because when I take it out, I just need to realize that it's like, okay, like some of these things like help the vocal sound like the vocal. So, I feel like I was just overcorrecting a little bit too much. So now I'm trying to correct less and be okay with it. Change my thresholds of what's acceptable again, you know, restudy through, references and just through practice dialing it in. And I feel like I'm doing a lot better at that. And recently I've been doing a lot more, adding a little bit more 2.5K, specifically with the Kramer HLS plugin. I don't know why it happened. I don't know where I heard it. I was just like, I rarely ever use this Kramer HLS, which is a channel strip from Waves that's emulating. I forgot what it's emulating. But anyway, I think like the default is like 2 or 2.5 or 2.8 or something like that in the mid-range. And I just boosted it. And I did it one time and like fixed the song perfectly. I was like, oh shit, I'm going to use this a lot more often. That's specifically how I've been doing it recently. That's been working for me. But it also hasn't worked on a couple songs. So we'll see how that goes. I feel like I've been doing really good at it. I just think it's also just super exciting that even at my level, I'm attuned to... I'm not plateauing yet. I'm not ready to plateau.
Yeah, it keeps going up.
Keeps going up. I'm not ready to plateau.
Yeah. I have a question too. Something that you were saying about the loudness and the contrast. We talked about it like last month. What was the concept? It was something like, it was with that one song that you showed us that's like already super loud and it gets crazy loud at the chorus, like The Government Knows. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, by Knower.
Yeah, like the concept of like the, like, having parts be how it's like density versus like wideness or something like that.
Density and loudness, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, how like it already sounds loud and stuff, and that's because he keeps it super dense, and then it goes to like really loud and crazy.
Yeah, it's a good song. It's a funny song.
Crazy how he does that. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think great, and that's specifically like EDM or like pop type stuff where it is hyper-compressed. And I think he's also just really clever and he did that a little bit on purpose because like you listen to other songs that do that well where they have like a great drop. It's not always like dense before. It's light and sparse and then they just make it really loud. But he does it in a cool way that I think is like fairly unique. And I don't know if he did it on purpose, but I mean, as an analyst, he just executed it so well.
Yeah, it's crazy.
DK, did you mix the songs XOXO and GMFU?
I did not mix those two songs. Those were done before me.
Oh. Well, that is really unfortunate.
Because, yeah, that's his biggest songs, right?
Because those two songs together have over like 110 million streams.
Yeah.
Dang it.
I thought you were going to start talking shit like, oh, those are the only good mixes I've heard from.
No.
And like you'll notice that like all of his top 10 is like different versions of those two songs, basically.
Oh. But hey, that's
so
crazy.
Sped up, nightcore, slowed and reverbed.
Did you do...
But yeah, dude, it was because he did so well with those songs that he was able to afford me.
Did you do Your Vampire?
I did.
2.8 million, baby.
That song's fire. I listen to that song like regularly.
Yes, sir.
Sick. Cool beans. Well, normally...
Hold on. Another one. Natalie Jane. We could learn a lot from that one, actually. Natalie Jane, who's another YouTuber, Instagrammer, social media. Her song, I'm Good, that I mixed with Charlie on a Friday, is at 6.5 mil.
Let's go.
That's what's up.
That's huge. That's crazy.
Yeah. Anyway, and there's something I'll tell you guys off... off recording some cool, a cool fact.
Ooh,
that
give the audience just a taste. Just dangle it in front of them before we rip it away and end this episode. We
know I just reached. I reached another career landmark.
Oh.
Oh, I'm excited to hear.
Okay, DK's cool. A millionaire.
He's finally a billionaire.
Dude, even if I was, let's say, do you think that I would ever announce that or flex that?
You would tell me.
I don't
me.
Believe in that. I would tell you, but I would ask you to keep it private, potentially.
Yeah, and then I'd immediately post on social media.
No. But there is, I will say though, there's a difference between being worth, you know, having a net, like a value of $100 million and having $100 million in cash. There's true. A difference there. Just yeah. because Jeff Bezos is worth this much doesn't mean he has that money in cash.
Yeah.
It's mostly an equity of a company, you know? Like,
yeah.
It's not liquid cash. Anyway,
well, before we start talking about things that are way out of our depth, James, why don't you go ahead and wrap this up for us?
Well, that is all for today. We hope you guys enjoyed this kind of different segment that we've had on the podcast. Just a heads up, down the road, we are planning on experimenting with some other ideas. We'll still be giving clips, but we want to find other ways that we could help give y'all technical tips and help everyone improve their ways of mixing and mastering and becoming an overall better sound engineer. Feel free to check out DK's website at dkmixes.com. Also, feel free to check out the mixingmusicpodcast.com/sponsors to see our sponsors that we have and ways that you could get some discounts. We have some discounts with Sweetwater. You go over there, we get a little bit kickback from there, and check out some of our other sponsors as well. We thank you all very much for listening to this. We have a great time recording these. Thank you for your support. We very much appreciate it. And without further ado, DK, sign us off.
Happy mixing. Wait, yeah, hold on. I got confused for a moment. Happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy. So many amazing free plugins available for download right now to help you with your production and mixing. Go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/plugins to download and get access to a bunch of free and premium plugins on Plugin Boutique. Happy mixing, my friends, and enjoy the show.